House of Run podcast.
What are you into these days? Mostly running, Alan. Running.
Yeah. Look at Bill! Look at Bill!
It's coming on! Bill, coming on!
I'm not thinking about making the team. I'm thinking about gold in Munich.
What can I say? I got beat by a zebra.
Starts now.
Welcome back, everyone, to the House of Run podcast. House of Run at gmail.com is the email address. I'm Kevin. He's Jason, back from Eugene, Oregon, for the first time since the pandemic. First time seeing the brand new track and field facility there. Jason, on the corner of 15th and Agate. How are you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, I mean, as you know, it's U.S. Championships. It's a big deal, but I think your opinion of New Hayward is the thing I'm most excited to hear.
You did text me like 30 minutes after I got there. So yeah. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't feel like, you know, and you didn't give me like a full run now. I felt like I was going to save this for the show. So like, I know everyone is hanging on your every word here.
Do you want me to lead with that?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. Well, a lot's been written. A lot's been said about the attendance. So I'm going to separate the attendance from the facility itself.
Okay.
And then maybe come back at the end to connect the two. But if you went there, or when you go there in a couple weeks, because you're going to be there, which is just very exciting. It was weird me experiencing it first time and then knowing you're just going to experience it for the first time 2 weeks later. It was kind of cool. Well, as compared to Old Hayward, where I experienced it for years and then you finally saw it. So my opinions, I mean, you could sway my opinion potentially because I've only seen it one time. You're going to go there and you're going to be like, wow, this is a cool sports facility. Right? The sight lines are really good. Whatever seat you end up getting.
And it's a world championships. I feel like it could be held in an old barn.
True. True.
And, you know, whoever put together that street meet that Johan Blake hated, like, they could put together the track and I'd still be pumped.
Yeah. But I'm saying you're going to say, think, oh, like, this looks like a modern stadium.
Like first class. Yeah.
Basically. All the seats are nice. Now, I did say you can sit anywhere. The sight lines are great. But you may not enjoy your seat in certain spots because of the sun bearing down on you. But were it to happen at night, all of the seats would be great. It is cool that track has this type of facility because I think every sport should have at least one state-of-the-art, all the history that's ingrained in it. You're like walking around and there's this mural or this plaque or you look at this towerman named after a bowerman. Like you're just seeing stuff.
Yeah.
All around you. But as has been brought up on the show, a lot of the stuff, just the functionality of it is the issue, I think. So the lack of covering of the seats being one, right? You're exposed. Like if it rains during the World Championships, so many people are going to get wet. Whereas the old Hayward Field with the covering, most people didn't. I guess when they brought in the temporary stuff on the side.
That seems like a weird oversight.
Yeah. And you could kind of see how they went back and forth between a bunch of different plans and had trouble settling on one. It does look like, and someone mentioned this before, I think it looks like a spaceship just landed on the edge of the University of Oregon campus. Like when you, the first time I looked at it, it just looks so out of place because it's this.
Well, in Eugene too, right? Like it's not in a massive city.
Yeah.
Where it might
blend
make
in.
Some sense. Right. Like, it's probably not too dissimilar from, like, I went to Green Bay, and, like, Green Bay's even smaller than Eugene, I'm sure, and there's this gigantic football stadium.
Right.
Surrounded by, like, just, like, this small town.
Yeah. And it's right in the middle of stuff, and I do like that they made, I don't know if you remember this area, but right there on 15th is now pedestrian only, and part of the reason I think they had to do that was just the stadium was just pushing out too far.
Yeah.
Right. It was just going out too far. The scoreboard is massive that they put in there, like really big. But that was a late addition. Like they built the stadium first and then they realized the scoreboards weren't good enough and then put in a big scoreboard. There's some cool stuff. This, you're going to be surprised about this take. If you want to watch the Hammer. Now, Hammer's going to be in the stadium for Worlds, but for USA's, it was on that back field.
Yeah.
You can watch it from inside the stadium on the concourse and you have an awesome view of it. You don't need to stand on the ground and look at it and be like, how's that? How far is that? I don't know. Did Walarczyk win, even though she's not even in these championships? I don't know, maybe. And then you also have a cool view from that same spot of the warm-up track. So if you're a diehard fan of track, you could have a ton of fun just standing there and people watching. and looking all the, oh, look, that's that person warming up. And, oh, man, look at the drills that they do. Like, it would be a lot of fun. And I think the renovations to the, you know, concession stands and the bathrooms and all that stuff are great. And it is cool that track has this stadium. I just wish it wasn't at the expense of the historic venue too. I wish we could have had both. I wish we could have had this plus the stadium that has all the history and tradition. Now, when we talk about attendance and the fact of the low numbers, you could point to Worlds happening in a couple of weeks, which we've talked about before. Yep. You could talk about just the high cost of travel and getting to Eugene, which I know things are more expensive now than they were before, but Eugene has stayed pretty much the same spot on the map as far as I'm concerned.
I think so.
Yeah. You could talk about the heat, but the heat being a problem is a function of the stadium because, yeah, it was hot, but it wasn't that much hotter than meets I've been to in the past. When there was breaks in the stadium, I went up there one time and there was a little break, people moved out of the stadium and just stood in the concourse.
Wow.
Just standing there for, you know, 10, 15 minutes before they go back out there because it was so hot. You could also, this was also brought up, they just haven't had meets there, you know, in a while. There was this break from when stadium construction started through COVID where there were several years where there was no meets. And when there's no meets, people can lose interest. So that is another thing to factor in. One thing that I just think is notable to bring up, remember the stadium was supposed to be 30,000.
Yeah.
And they said, no, it's not going to be 30,000. It's going to be 20,000. It's not going to be 20,000. It's 12,900 the way it is right now. The temporary stuff, because it's a bowl on the one side, they can't put, you know, when you would, from where you were sitting in the media section in 2016, you know how to your right,
yeah,
on the first curve, there was temporary stuff. And then to your left on the 200 meter start, there was temporary stuff. To the right on the first curve, that's all, you can't put temporary stuff there. It's a bowl. It goes all the way around.
Yeah.
So you could only put it in one spot. So I don't know what the number is going to be, but I asked someone, I said, is it even going to get to the capacity of old Hayward when you had the additional spots? And they said, no.
Oh, wow.
So I said, so it's not even going to get to 20. And they said, no. Now, I know there's people involved in it that say it's going to get up to 20. Maybe that's some standing room only stuff that they're going to do some math on.
Right.
But which is, I think after this weekend, you think, all right, lower capacity, the better. But it's funny that we went through this whole thing and we're going to end up with a smaller stadium. Again, it's a nice facility. And I'm sure training there and competing there and running a program through there is great. But just some of the stuff with the functionality and just, it doesn't, and this is a completely subjective statement, so you're probably going to be like, Kevin, you're silly. People listening are going to be like, Kevin, you're silly. It just didn't feel intimidating. You didn't feel the gravitas to it. And maybe that's going to come after 50 years or something.
Right.
But when you walked into the old one and you just looked up at the grandstand and you looked at a packed house or even a mostly packed house, a different feeling came out of you than now. Maybe the athletes disagree. I wasn't actually running the meet. So there was no media 800 this week. But it just didn't have that. It felt so modern, and it felt very similar to other stadiums that you'd see in Europe or a soccer stadium that you'd see in the United States, right? They built all these 20,000-seat soccer stadiums around the United States now. That's the thing, because they figured there's 20,000, at least 20,000 soccer fans in this city. Let's build a stadium. That's how it felt. And all the history and the tradition that they put into the stadium and on the outside of the stadium was fun as a track fan to see. But ultimately, they're going to have to get butts in the seats, Jace. Like, you could have the best facility ever.
Yeah.
And if it's half full, it's going to be a downer. And you could have the worst facility in the world. And if it's full, people are going to be loving their experience there.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great point. I'll be curious to see, I guess, how it is over. I mean, I think Worlds will be full because it's Worlds, but the next couple few years, you know, just how that changes things. Because I do think, you know, we talked about it obviously a bunch of times, but just the amount of stuff here this year in particular, and there's always going to be a lot, but Worlds in particular, that just seems like, you know, how many people. Mm-hmm. Outside of media or stuff like that are going, hey, I'm outside of Oregon are going, I'm going to travel USA's and then you know, 3 weeks later, I'm traveling to Worlds. Like, that's you know,
yeah.
If you can do it, awesome. But it's not the easiest thing to get done.
Yeah, a lot of the fans I talked to, they were just doing this one. This was going to be the one. And they weren't going to come back. And then a lot of people you talked to, they're skip this one and they're going to go to the other one. I totally understand that. And that makes sense. And I'm willing to accept that. But then there's two things to think about. One, what happens if it's not full at Worlds? Then you have a big problem.
That would look bad.
And two, next year, as you said, there's no excuse. The World Championships are not in Eugene. NCAAs aren't even in Eugene. NCAAs are in Austin next year. Then after that, it's going to be in Eugene for forever or something. But next year, if Pre is empty, or not empty, if Pre but is not,
yeah.
a third full or a half full, that's a problem. And then you got to go look back at those other reasons that I brought up earlier for why is it? It's no secret that the track fan base trends older. So are there things that are going on there that are dissuading older fans or older potential fans from showing up? Because the way I see it, like, what was it? Did you see the attendance? Was it three? Hold on, I got it somewhere here. It was
numbers out there, but yeah, I don't remember it offhand.
Here we go. Thursday, this is ticketed spectators, 2751. These are from USATF. Friday, 3314. Saturday, 3664. Sunday, 3577. Now I'll say, Sunday seemed a lot more crowded than Thursday, so to have there only be 800 more people there was a bit of a surprise, but. That's a look. I mean, 3,500, 3,600.
Yeah, that's low. That's
usually you had that contingent of core Eugene, Portland area folks that would go to everything that would make up that number alone because they would go to the dual meets or the Oregon relays or whatever, the Oregon Twilight meet. You'd get those numbers there or close to that. Now, I know the 12,900 is bigger than whatever the old one was without the fill-in. So that's what, 8,000?
8,000, yeah.
Yeah. So half full in that is 4,000. Half full in this is 6,000. But we're not even getting there. And then we're arguing about, you know, 500 fans here, 1,000 fans there. It's just – it was just weird watching the 100 and stuff go off. And I wasn't having full Doha flashbacks. But part of it's like, you know, victory laps where there's just all these empty seats. It's just not – it's not the same. So – I found it, for that reason, I found it somewhat harder to evaluate the stadium as a whole because I wanted to compare the crowd noise.
Oh, for sure.
And you just can't. It's not fair to the current stadium. I like, hey, does this just sound louder? Are the acoustics built in a way that it sounds louder? But everybody knows where I stood about this. I talked about it for like a year. So they're probably sick of hearing me talk about it. I'm interested in your thoughts when you're there. You're much more impartial. I admit I am incredibly biased.
No, that's fair though. I didn't seem like you were being unfair there. But yeah, I'll be curious for Worlds because obviously bigger crowds, hopefully sold out crowds, but obviously bigger crowds at the least. And yeah, we'll kind of get a better taste.
Yeah, I just think that it's a, you know, the money that they poured in it, you can totally tell.
It looks impressive, even on TV. Like, you know, obviously you want to see the crowd more there, but like it looks very nice.
Yeah, and the seats are big and soft and all that stuff. But I just think if you've been to other sporting events in a new facility, you'd be like, why is my track friend so obsessed with this place? This looks like
right.
a lot of different places. Other than the seats all being cushioned is a nice touch.
That's pretty nice.
I don't know if there's another place that does that, but yeah, in a couple weeks, we'll see. I think that's the true test. That was the impetus for building this, correct? That was the whole
100%
whole thing. And then what you and I think you agree with me on this was, hey, you got to live with it after though. So what's going to happen? Is it worth it if you have to live with it after? Do you tear the great one down or the historic one down to get a new one for just one meet? Because how are you going to fill it up for all those other meets?
Yeah, I think, and I think that's why.
It's not a good start.
I think that's why. Like Worlds is the first test, but then like next year, you know, Pre and USA, it's like that's another test. Like it's going to be the next few years. Like it'll be really interesting because you're right. If it's, you know, if it's half full every time during USA's, that's not a great look.
Yeah, that's going to hurt. That's going to diminish what is because that's what they had. They had the fans. And I don't know. to people say I put it in a different spot because you're going to get more fans. I don't think you are. I think you're going to get similar numbers here. Usually Eugene outperformed. Now Eugene just stayed the course. But we'll see. We'll see with Worlds and then moving into, maybe there'll be some changes. Maybe people's habits will go back to normal. You know, prices start to level out. Maybe we'll see more folks being able to travel there. I think there are more flights available to Eugene. I mean, I get doesn't help with the price going up, but I know, like, you got a good flight to Eugene.
Say, mine was easy. What are you guys talking about? It's cheap.
If you're going from Las Vegas to Eugene, probably still $200 or something. But let's get to the meat. Oh, I want to say one more thing. Met a listener out there.
Yeah.
And had a great conversation. At some point, he said something effective. I wish Jason was here. I said, yeah, you and I both.
I appreciate that.
I said, I you'd hope, be having a lot more fun.
Not at all. It's but yeah, that's cool. I'm glad you got to meet. Who was the listener?
Alan.
Okay.
Alan. Nice. One good thing, if no one shows up to Worlds, much easier to find the listeners.
Right? That's a good point.
You can get a table at any restaurant. You can walk right up to the bar. You could find their seats anywhere you wanted to sit. You just be like, hey, I'm in section 12. Which one are you? Oh, the only guy. It's like a day baseball game. I'll be there.
Love it. It's a good silver lining.
Yeah. I was trying to think of positives. All right. Let's first review who drafted the better team. We did the event draft last week.
That's right.
We each drafted our running events. You had the women's 400 hurdles, men's 200, men's 5K, men's 100, men's 1500, women's 15, women's steeple, men's 400 hurdles, women's 100 hurdles. I had the other events. You won. I just want to concede right now.
Yeah, after you named the first two events, I feel like that helped right there.
Yeah, let's compare your first two to my first two. Men's 110s and then women's 200. You got me there. You got a world record and the most viral moment, I'd say. Did you see the post-race interview in the men's two?
Yes. That was awesome. That was exactly what I want. Right? Like that's perfect. I mean, also, I mean, the way Knighton ran that curve,
he was ahead by so much.
I mean, it was over. Like, I was like, oh my God, like, is he going to run 19.3? Like, what's happening here?
Yeah.
And, you know, partially, probably he went out maybe a little bit too fast, but Lyles was able to close, obviously, so close. And it's one of those, you know, where, you know, Lyles is obviously, he looks 100% Lyles again, which is awesome to see. Knighton still looks really, really good, but, you know, little bit of worry going in with the, since he hadn't run since his 1949,
yeah,
but still looked phenomenal. And I have no idea who's going to win at Worlds. Like, and that's the kind of the best case scenario, right? And Knighton being kind of pissed, like, that's good. Yeah. Good. I love it.
1967 and 1969, pretty in line with what I thought. I didn't think we'd see another 19, I still stand by the 1949 is going to be the world lead at the end of the year.
Yeah, they'll go faster than this at Worlds, but 1949 is still a big, big hill to climb.
So I watched this one in the stadium, and I was, like, I was facing the whole, like, they're running towards me. I was, like, right past the finish line, and I was like, Knighton's ahead by a lot, but then I saw Lyles do the point as he crossed the finish line, because you can't tell.
Yeah, from that angle, it's, yeah.
Like, what?
From regular angle, it would have been tough, yeah.
Yeah, what just happened? And he timed the point perfectly. He said, and so it created this whole moment. Otto Bolden said, just getting posterized and on the broadcast. And then Lyle said afterwards, it wasn't directed towards Knighton. It was directed to the people who doubted him.
Yeah, I think he's just pumped. Like, that's, he's, you know.
He's no Lyles. He's going to
do exactly
that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't, yeah, I have no blame on, you know, me. I can be fun police sometimes, but I have no.
Yeah, as I say.
Absolute zero problem with what Lyles did. Like, yeah, he was pumped. He just won the USAs. Mm-hmm. He, you know, was border, you know, a 50-50 shot probably at best.
Yeah.
And he had a real rough couple of years, and now he's back on top. Like, that's got to feel good.
Okay, hold on, Sergeant of the Fun Police, though. I have another case for you to crack here.
Please.
What about the interview? Are you okay with the interview?
Absolutely. I love it so much.
So they said, they go, Knighton walked off the interview. That's what I heard first. I said, wait, what? What happened? And then someone had the transcript, and I hadn't seen the video. And in it, he says, I was behind or something, right? And then
I knew my top end was higher than his.
Yeah, and I knew my top end was better than his, and I got him at the end or something. So, well, that's not that bad. So then I watched it. I was like, all right, I could see.
I mean, it's definitely a, hey, I'm like kind of talking like this guy's not here right now.
Yes. Yes. However, he didn't say this guy's a clown.
No, no. He just was like being kind of his, you know, usual self where he's just like, he's like I said, he was just pumped.
Yeah.
And then, but I also don't, I'm not like mad at Knighton either. Like
everything he said was true is my point.
Yeah,
no, he said, sure. I knew mine was better, and it was. His top end was better. And then Knighton, I kind of liked it, where he said, job's not finished, and then walks off, and then Knighton, and then Lyles yells back, yeah, job's not finished.
But it's just, like, perfect. Like, I think it just, I mean, does that not just even, not like I this event needed any help with these two already, yeah. Like, both just so good and just so much fun, but, like, added that on top of it, like, this is...
Yeah.
You know, it's a borderline first round pick for sure for the most exciting thing for Worlds right now.
I didn't have any problem with it. And then they cut and they sort of Curly, and Curly's just laughing.
Yeah, Curly's just like, cool, I just made a second team. This was fun.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't want to be involved in any of this. Knighton is insanely competitive. He's only 18.
Right.
But he approaches this thing, I'm going to win.
Yeah, he's like, I'm the best in the world. Like, that's how he thinks. Yeah. And I'm not going to blame a guy for... thinking that, like,
yeah, and Lyles treats him as a clear rival or a clear threat, otherwise he wouldn't be talking like that. I just think the way you put it, he's talking like he wasn't there. I think it's a good description, because even in the, by the time he got to where we were in the interview area and someone said, you know, the point and all that stuff, he was just like, oh, I hope he didn't interpret it that way as him, like, it, you know, if he did, I'm gonna like straighten it out. And then that's why he sent the tweet out and said it wasn't towards him. Like, I don't think Lyles is naturally like that. I just think he was so pumped up. However, Knighton, if he's not winning, he wants to get back out there and do it again. Yeah. So yeah, it's,
I'm not mad at that. Yeah, at least I don't think Lyles, he doesn't come across as this like trash talking type guy to me. He comes across as this dude who's just like so like candid and fun and just like gets wrapped up in the moment. Like, so it's like, you know, if he just went out like, hey, there was a lot of trash about how this guy was better than me, I showed him that, you know, if it was that kind of stuff, it would be like, oh, okay, man. Like,
yeah,
cool, soccer. But take it easy. But this was not that. This was like him just going like, yeah, I'm still the king. I've got this. You know, like, it was, I don't know. I loved it.
Yeah. Most other sports, I guess the guy's not standing right there.
Yeah, that's the weird part of it, right? Because it's like, hey, you guys all just made the team, right? Like, that's the idea, is let's get all these guys together because they're our top three or top four. But also, like, I also don't blame, you know, Knighton. It, like, you just lost a super close race where, you know, you flew around the turn. You just lost a little bit at the end. I don't know, man. But it's weird. I actually left that going. Like, I think I like Knighton more in Worlds. Is that
really?
Weird? Yeah, I
because of the other stuff, or because of
not the nothing to do with race. The post race stuff. Nothing to do with that. Just like the way he ran. Like, it seems like almost like he was just a little bit out of gas, and he hadn't run much. So I just feel like if he could tune it up a little bit, I feel like I still feel like his ceiling's a little higher, which 1949, I guess, makes sense.
Okay.
Like, if somebody's going to win this in 1904 or 1950 or whatever, I still think that's more likely to be Knighton than Lyles.
I just think I picked Lyles, but I had Knighton as the number one ranked person, because that makes sense.
Yeah, going into this race, I actually thought Lyles should be favored. But now that I see Knighton, like, looked 99.9% as good as Lyles.
Yeah.
I actually think the next 3 weeks to just like fine tune, like, I don't know. I'm a little tiny bit higher on Knighton, but like, I mean, to me, it's a, you know, it's a 52-48 or whatever you want to call it.
I mean, Lyles' confidence seems to be.
Oh, I love it. And back, like, to and where it wouldn't was. Surprise me at all. Obviously, if Lyles wins, like, of course.
What I'm trying to figure out is, I guess you'd have to break down the splits and stuff. Was Knighton's first 100 just otherworldly, or
that's what I kind of feel like it off, was, but I could Lyles be. I haven't seen anything.
Yeah. Oh wait, we do have splits here.
Yeah. What do you got?
All right. Lyles 10.44, Knighton 10.31, Curley 10.52, Bednarik 10.39, Josephus Lyles 10.43. So according to this, Josephus Lyles was through 100 faster than Noah. Bowling 10.45, so just behind Noah. Kyrie King 10.49, and Javonte Harding 10.61. All right, and then the
next... It's a little less of a gap than I would have thought. I mean, that's still a lot of time, obviously, but it's a little less than I thought.
Yeah, 0.15. They ran from 100 to 150 the same, Lyles and Knight, and according to this, 4.55 for both. And then Lyles closed his last 50 in 4.7, and Knight in 4.83.
Okay, so yeah, it's... I mean, and... Man, yeah, I just... I mean, coming out of that, obviously, it was so close, and it was just the, you know, the way they ran it was completely different. And Lyles is strong. Like, that's his specialty, is running, finishing stronger. So, like, I'm not... So maybe that's just the way it's going to go. Yeah, I just think he could do a... I don't know.
Could he run what Bednarik had run for the first...
But then does 100? That take just a tiny bit away from his finish? I don't know. I mean, it's...
I don't know if it's a start... I just don't know if it's a start thing.
Right.
Or if, like, a literal, like, oh, I mean, we don't have reaction time or anything on this, but I just, I have 10-meter splits. You want those? Here we go. 2.14, 1.01, 0.97, 0.96, 0.90, 0.95, 0.89. So from 60 to 70, 0.89. 0.9, 0.87, 0.89, 0.91, 0.93, 0.87, 0.92, 0.94, 0.86.
Is anybody keeping track of what's happening with this?
He ran hold on, though. His fastest split... was from 150 to 160.
That was where he ran Knighton?
No, Lyles, 0.86.
Okay. That makes sense, though.
Yeah, 0.96, 1 second, 0.95, and then 0.94. I'm looking at where Knighton's fastest was. Knighton had a 0.86 from 40 to 50.
It's pretty crazy on a curve.
Yeah, that's why I'm really interested in this.
And, like, Knighton does get out a little faster, and Lyles closes. So it's like, it is, like, they're not going to be shadowing each other. Like, odds are at Worlds, Knighton will be in the lead.
Yeah.
Coming off the turn, and then it's just a matter of can Lyles chase him down. And, like, maybe that's, you know, it might be very, very similar. That seems drastic. Like, and maybe, you know, I kind of obviously knew their styles a little bit, but, like, and maybe this was super exaggerated.
Yeah,
but I'd be shocked if it's that big of a gap at Worlds. But who knows? I don't know.
Job's not finished. That's why I know.
Love
Job's not finished. Okay, you want to talk about your other top pick, women's 400 hurdles?
I mean,
you want to play
Sydney,
the song?
Absolutely, got to play the song.
Well, it's a world record, the likes of which has never been seen. It's a world record, highest, fastest, farthest a human's ever achieved. Wouldn't believe if I told you, go to YouTube and I'll show you. Got results to verify, soon it will be ratified. Well, it's a world record, the likes of which has never been seen. Well, it's a world record, highest, fastest, farthest a human's ever achieved. Well, it's a world record. Well, it's a
Yeah, I don't. What do you say? Like, it's not like a cliche thing. Like, what do you say about Sydney? But I truly don't know. Like, I mean, so she's been a part of, you know, 5 world record runs. She set it 3 times, and she finished second the other 2 times. She did this completely by herself. When I made this pick, I was hoping we'd get a Delilah Muhammad in this race. Obviously, it did not happen. A lot of the bi people, outside of Lyles, decided to take it easy. But I mean, another world record, just it's ridiculous. It's so easy for her. It looks that way. I'm sure it's not as easy as that, but like, it's just, it's unbelievable.
It was so ho-hum in a way.
That's what I mean. Like, yeah, it's weird. I think even the announcer said, like, during the ride, like, oh, it's not going to be as fast as it was at pre or whatever. Or not pre, but was it pre? I don't know. I can't even keep track.
Which one?
I think during the race, they mentioned that, hey, this isn't even going to be as fast as whatever when she ran the... ran her last race.
Oh, in Nashville with the hurdles in the wrong spot?
Yeah, so they're like, oh, it doesn't look like it's going to be as fast as that, and then she breaks the world record.
Yeah. Well, and also the build-up, because what did she run the semi in? Let me find it. Hold on.
Yeah, I don't have that up.
Friday, here we go. Kevin's looking up stuff on the computer scooter. 52.90, and it was so easy. I could read.
Jog, yeah.
Yeah, do you want the hurdle-by-hurdle splits on that? I have those too. If she hadn't broken the world record yet, but say the time was the same time,
yeah,
and you saw that and you saw how she shut down, we would have been saying, oh my gosh, did you see how easy that was? She could probably break the world record.
Yeah.
And that's what I was saying, but I think it got lost because everybody just assumed she would do it. So it wasn't that big of a deal. And I was saying, like,
she's done it so many times. Like, yeah, it's even she doesn't get, like, really excited. It's like crossing the finish line. It's just like,
yeah.
Okay.
We did recap pods every night for FloatTrack. And on Friday night, I said, for Saturday, I was like, Sydney's going to break the world record. And I was like, is this thing on? Guys, Sydney's going to break the world record. But it's okay.
It's cool. Like, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Cool, Kevin.
Bold statement, Kevin. Really, to go out on a limb there.
That's amazing. Tom Brady's going to win another Super Bowl. Like, it just seemed... I hope that doesn't happen, by the way.
Right.
It seemed like it was going... Like, we haven't reached her peak yet.
No. Like, and I was trying to think. So I'm like, who is the current GOAT of women's 400-meter hurdles? Is it Muhammad?
Didn't we do this before? We did this exercise before.
I'm sure we... I thought we did. So I was going through, like, old medalists and stuff like that, and I found, like, 10 different women with 2 gold medals. And I couldn't find anybody who had more than that, and maybe I just didn't go back far enough, but I was trying to go with, like, relatively recently. And...
Yeah.
Obviously, Sydney wins gold this year, that'll be her second gold medal as well. And at that point, it's like, all right, well, she's...
Yeah. Youngest GOAT ever. You said it.
Yeah, we said it. Yeah, we said it a few weeks ago. And I think it's like a foregone conclusion, which is insane. And it's also slightly insulting to Lila Muhammad, who's still incredible. But just the fact that she didn't run.
Yeah. Here's the top 10 all time list by times.
Yeah.
Times on everything, but a lot of these times came in gold medal performances. McLaughlin. McLaughlin, Muhammad, McLaughlin, McLaughlin, Bull, Muhammad, Muhammad, McLaughlin, Petchanakina, who had the record before all this started. 52-34 was the record before all this started. It's now down to 51-41. So.
She's got 4 of the top 8 ever.
4 of the top 8. She's got 4 of the top 5, Jace. That's a better way to say it.
3 of the top 5, you mean?
No.
Right?
51. No, she go. She has.
Oh, this list is not updated with the most recent one. Sorry. That's...
Noob. She's got. Yeah, she's 1, 2, 4, 5. So she's 4 of the top 5. 5 of the top 9. Yeah, the only thing is just the medal count. So she could do. You know, she gets the gold this year. She gets the gold again in 23 and then gets another gold in Paris.
I think she gets the third one. I think the argument's completely dead at that point. I think it's, you know, she gets the gold this year. It's like already like, yeah, she's probably the best ever, but she's 22 or 23. So let's like wait just one more year to officially name it. But I think that's where we're at.
So wait, you're saying she needs how many?
I think, so if she wins the second gold this year, then she's like tied for the number of golds. But then there's other women with, you know, a couple golds and silvers or bronze or stuff like that, but I think she gets her third gold, I think it's over completely. Like, there's no argument at that point, because I think obviously times make a huge difference, but I do think medals have to be the first judge of the GOAT conversation.
Yeah. So let's see, I'm looking at this right now. This is weird. The world, so they didn't do this in the Olympics until 84. I feel dumb, I didn't know that, but started in the world championships in 80. So
that's weird.
Yeah. So Pechchanikina, the one who has the record, she's got a world championship, but no Olympic gold. Privalova, she's got one. Mihednova had two. Muhammad.
Two.
Two.
I'm telling you, there's at least five women with two gold medals, I think.
Malane Walker, two. Yeah, okay. And then Sydney will have, this will be two this year. So you're saying she just needs to just one more year and then it's case closed?
I think it's, yeah. I mean, because right now, I think it's Muhammad. You know, dual world records, two gold medals, three silver medals. Could be four silver medals this year. I think she's the one to beat. But once you get that third gold, and she's probably going to break the record again at Worlds. I think she'll be sub 51 before whenever she decides to. it's so comical just how good she is. And like I said, it's just the ease in which she does it.
Yeah.
She has a Felix quality to her, because there's not a lot of, like, she's just very just like professional about it and like straightforward.
Yeah.
But she also just even rarely, like, it doesn't even seem like she gets excited. Where Felix, I think he shows a little more of that. But it's, I don't know. It works. Whatever it is, she should not change a thing.
All right. Well, we're 35 minutes into the pod. We talked about two events. So,
yeah. But also the track for a long time.
And song. Give me more highlights. I've talked enough about this meet. I'll let you go and tell me what else you thought was cool.
Oh my God. What else I thought was cool? So many things. I don't even know which direction to go. Well, we already had talked about Curly, so I guess we could go to the men's 100.
Because
Curly had a very, very good weekend. 977, he was killing the rounds as well. It's your boy, Marvin Bracey, 985.
Yeah.
Bramell, 988. Coleman decided not to run the final, which was probably a good call because I think he was going to get smoked. He also decided not to run the 200, which again I think was a good call because he would.
Well, ran the first round.
No, but I mean
didn't run on the second day.
Yeah.
Which, side note, the 200 having the semis and the finals on the same day,
it's a little rough.
I thought Lyles may not do it because of that, because he had the bye.
Yeah.
I thought.
I'm glad. Yeah, and I'm obviously glad he did. Like I said, most guys decided not to do it, so I'm not picking on Coleman too much, but he didn't look very good. And Curly looked really great.
Yeah.
He's been consistent as hell. I mean, Curly's gold medal favorite right now? Gotta be, right?
Yeah, but he's a small favorite. I promise myself I wouldn't.
He's not overwhelming for sure, but
don't want to overreact to the trials results because
Bramell was
running 980 last
year. Yeah, Bramell's great, but like Coleman, I don't feel great about right now. He certainly could still medal and he could win, but like,
yeah.
Man, I don't know. I'm you know, it seemed like I'd kind of just set him up. Jacobs, I think, ran like 10-0 or 10-1 or something like that.
Yeah.
He's
running in Stockholm. By the time this posts, he may have already run at Stockholm. No, the big story on the 100 side was outside of the US was Jamaica, where Johan Blake ran 985 somehow, which I just was like, what?
He hadn't broken 9.9 since 2012.
Yeah, this is his fastest time in literally 10 years.
I have no idea what to make of that.
Yeah.
My
son has never lived in a world where Johan Blake is sub 9.9.
That's a good point. Yeah, so I'm just in a holding pattern on Johan Blake right now because I have zero idea what to make of that.
Right. And DeGrasse, we don't know what's going on with him.
He deserves all the benefit of the doubt because he does this every year and all he does is medal. But man,
he's stretching it this year.
To get a medal in the 100 or 200 is going to take something fast.
Yeah. But again, I don't want to read too much into the trials results.
I'm just reading into end of June.
Oh yeah, I'm not talking about with DeGrasse. I'm talking about with the US guys, basically. It would not surprise me if Bramell flipped it back to where it was at pre.
Curly. Absolutely. No, I think I have Curly and Bramell ahead of Coleman.
Yeah, and then I'd probably put... What's crazy is Bramell almost missed the team. 0.02 from Mackay Williams, which was crazy. Bracey ran an amazing race. I guess you'd probably put him in there, but... Yeah, and then Jacobs, I'm going to wait until Thursday to see what he runs.
Yeah, that's fair.
Also, interesting note, Curly, because he ran 76 in the prelim or the semi, Curly, Bramell, and Christian Coleman all have the same PB now, 976.
Wow.
Makes things way easier to remember.
Right.
And also, I don't know if I'm going to count out Coleman yet.
I'm definitely not counting him out by any means.
I know you're counting him out, but I don't know if I'm going to count him out.
He did not look good. Like I said, I don't think, I mean, maybe he would have finished third in that final, maybe.
But that would have been fine. That would have been fine.
Oh, absolutely. But at the same time, like, this was, the conversation was like, hey, he's back. He's the gold medal favorite is back. Maybe Jacobs can give him a run for our money. Maybe Brumell. And like I said, Curley's just been consistent, the most consistently good sprinter in the world. So yeah, it's just a lot of questions right there.
Yeah. The semis were faster than the final. Like, Curley was 76, Brumell 81, Bracey was 86. So Bracey ran a little bit faster, but Brumell and Curley both ran slower. But I'm just looking at Coleman's time, 987. That's not bad. I think if he would have ran that and got fourth by, like, if he would have run what Makai Williams did and was like 2/100ths behind Brumell, that's not the end of the world. I just think the idea of him being a dominant force this year, it's not going to happen. If he wins, it's going to be a very narrow victory.
Yeah.
We're not in the Bolt era. We're not even in the 2019 era where he had a pretty solid win. It's going to come down to inches.
Yes.
100, I think, unless somebody just does something pretty wild. I think it's going to get pretty tight. And we'll see what Jacobs, because this time last year, Jacobs was running 10.3 or something.
Right. That's a good point. Yeah. It's like too early to count. I'm just glad he ran a race, I guess. And like you said, yes. This week will tell us a lot.
All right, so that's the men's 100. That's the men's 200. Talked about women's 4-minute hurdles. You want to talk about women's 8?
That yes,
was a little more exciting than I thought it was going to be.
Good pick by you. That was, it went chalk, but it was a lot more interesting chalk.
Yeah, but would that result have been more interesting in terms of for the event draft if Mo had run 150, like got a PR basically?
If she PR'd, yes. But if she just ran
154.
Sure, 150. 154? If you ran 155.6.
Yeah, and won by a lot.
It would have been like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, because that would
Wilson had the lead, Jace. Audrey Wilson had the lead.
I can't believe that. Well, first of all, I mean, great for Audrey Wilson. She looked great. I just was shocked that Mo gave that up, but then I was even more shocked that she was able to take the lead back.
Yeah.
So that was weird. Like I said, credit to Wilson, because that's the best she's looked in years.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, outside of Mo and Hodgkinson, I think she's, you know, she's got to be right there. And Rogers, of course, makes another team and finishes third and runs well.
Yeah, close fast again.
Yeah, I still think Mo is a good thing ahead of Wilson, because that just, her just running 157.1 is strange to me, and I don't know if she, I'd be curious just like what happened, like in her head, like did she just like kind of, was she smoothing it in, or did she just
smoothing
like
smoothing it in? I
don't know what the hell that says.
Cruising,
like,
in. Cruising,
yeah, but like, or was it like, hey, I just, that's, that was it, like my legs were kind of dead, I don't know.
Yeah, she didn't really give any indication that I heard of issue. Just
157.1 for her is like,
well, she almost ran that in the prelim, dude.
Seems like a jog. Yeah, no, that's, I mean, it's just like, for all accounts, we go, hey, she can run 155 whenever she wants.
The third 200 looked slow. Now, I'm going to confirm that with these 200-meter splits that I'm going to read to you right now. Ready?
Can you give me 10-meter splits again?
I can give you 100-meter splits, but I'm not fluent in 100-meter splits.
Yeah, third 200, I think, is perfect.
200. 27.2. 30.04. 30.67. 29.25. So that middle 400 was 60.7.
Right. I'd be curious where that's at, like how that compares to a normal thing. That's probably a little slow.
You know, I should have looked that up to have a comparison. It just, I was waiting for the backstretch move with 300 to go. Because
you know those are going to be the two slowest 200s, right? But like, it was it more drastic than it should be? Probably. And like, if Mo needs to, can she run that last one? More like 28 or what, you know, I don't know. I'm not worried about Mo at all. Like, I still think she's the favorite, and I think Hodgkinson's right there, and you know, Wilson has put herself as, you know, probably the favorite for third. But I don't know, just something just a tiny bit to keep an eye on.
I'm trying to find these. Okay, hold on. I might have something for you here. I might have some times to compare. I got the trials results. My memory is her third 200 was really fast. Or that's where the gap opened, at least.
Mm.
So I'm just looking this up to confirm. All right, let's see if we have some splits here. Ah,
it's
we got
splits.
Very
split-heavy show.
Okay, actually, and I'm wrong. It was the last 200. Okay, so this is what she did in the trials. She ran 156, Rogers ran 157, and then Wilson ran 158. But it was, you know, she won by 1 point, like a second and a half.
Yeah.
So 27.5 last year.
Close to the opening this year.
Yeah, do you have this year's again? Hold on, I got to put this
in. No, you had them on.
All right. Yeah, 27.5 versus 27.2. Actually, faster this year. Then 30.04, and then she was 29.99. So pretty much
so
the same.
The third 200 was drastically faster.
No, it's not. That's the plot twist.
Well, 29.9 versus 30.6 or whatever you said?
No. That was the second 200, 30.04. So they here, let me just say it like this.
This is great listening.
Okay, this year she was 57.25.
Yeah.
The trials, she was 57.53. So,
okay, so
pretty close,
drastic.
Right?
Yeah.
All right. Third 200 last year, 30.05. Third 200 this year, 30.67. So that's
pretty big.
That's pretty significant. Okay, I was right. I give myself credit for that. All right. So she goes 30.05 last year, and then the final 200, 28.49.
Yeah, that.
This time she goes 29.25.
So she was smoothed it in, basically, is what we're.
she was almost a second, or 0.8, basically.
So unless, you know, one of two things, she either was just like, hey,
smoothing
I'm just.
Smoothing it in?
Yeah, not going crazy here. Granted, it's USA's, and you go, they usually push it a little bit on that. Or she just, whatever reason, wasn't her best day.
Yeah.
And didn't quite have the same pop in her legs down the stretch. But either way, I'm not too worried. But also, I feel like once she got past, the fact that she repassed her,
yeah, it was
makes
good
me think that
her.
She was kind of smoothing it in. I'm just gonna keep saying it.
No, I think it's the opposite. I think that she got past and was able to respond just shows she was going flat out. She was in full on competition mode. Because I think if she was just smoothing it in, which I still don't know the definition of.
No, nope, me neither. I'm just rolling with it.
All right, let's move on. What's another event you want to talk about? Anything else? Is that it? Is that the whole meet?
That's it. That was everything.
Choices. Nothing.
Women's two.
Yeah.
I mean, Steiner.
She's fast.
21.77. Like, I liked her a lot. Coming in, I mean, I guess, what's bigger, you know, Steiner running 21.77 or Thomas not making the team?
That's a like, tough break. Tough break
brutal.
For her.
And I feel terrible for Gabby Thomas because, like, you know.
She medal ran, threat.
She ran, yeah, oh, absolutely. She ran 21.6 last year. Yeah, just terrible. I mean, but like, I mean, Steiner is unbelievable. Just a bummer we couldn't get, I mean, those two squaring off even, you know, like would have been so fun to watch. But yeah, I mean, you know, Clark runs 21.9, Prandini 22.0.
Yeah.
Another really pretty fast 200.
Meanwhile, at the Jamaican trials, Shrika Jackson
ran 21.5. Yeah.
Jeez. I was going to say, where did that come from? But we know exactly where that came from because she's really good. She ran 10. She won the 100, too. She beat Thompson Ryan, Fraser Price. Fraser Price didn't run it. So she started it and then didn't finish, which is a cool
yeah, thing. Yeah, she's been, you know, she's the third Jamaican, which is a brutal spot between the two greatest runners of all time. But she's been nothing but absolutely phenomenal. Like, she's out Fred Curley. As they both made the switch from the 4 to the 1-2.
I think she's going to win the 200. Better. What do you think? I think she's going to win the 200.
She's the favorite, for sure. Lane Thompson isn't the favorite in either event right now, which is weird to say. But granted, she doesn't win golds in world championships.
Well, she also doesn't.
For some reason.
Yeah, it's also there's a jinx if you win the national championship in Jamaica and try to come back and win, too. So she's biding her time.
That's a good point.
Yeah,
But Fraser Price is definitely the favorite in the 100, and Shrika Jackson should be the favorite in the 200. Not to say Elaine Thompson couldn't do it, because we know how good she was. But even Elaine Thompson at her best in the 2, 21.55 is, as you know, right up there with Elaine Thompson's best time.
Yeah, exactly. I looked it up. She didn't run sub 22 until the Olympics. Thompson Raw last year. She ran quite a few 200s too, and nothing indicated she was going to do 21.5. So I think we're testing the Elaine Thompson really peaks when it matters theory this year, as well as the can Elaine Thompson win in world championship years theory at the same time.
Yes.
But
no, it's a great point. She's trying the DeGrasse theory. She's putting that to the test as well.
But she's starting off from this historic high point too. It's like, can I get even better? Can I run 10.3 at the Olympics?
Right.
But Steiner, 21.77, that's another PB for her. I'm interested to see her and the other collegians just how long they can keep this going. They have to last a couple more weeks. Just 2 more weeks.
That was a really good meet for the collegians, right? I mean, like, better than way above the average collegiate performance at USA's, right?
I don't know my chart.
I feel
chart.
Like normally a lot more kind of fall off where I felt like it was pretty significant.
Well, yeah, because you had the women's 100. Melissa Jefferson won the women's 100 from Coastal Carolina. I mean, she won indoors, but she wasn't the NCAA champion outdoors. Yeah, so you had her, you had Steiner, I didn't realize this until now. Diggs, yeah, 1, 2, 4, all. I guess I should have known this. Why did I know this? And then you had women's high hurdles. You had Aaliyah Armstrong make the team. Women's 4-minute hurdles. You had Britton Wilson make the team. 800.
Courtney Weymouth made the team.
Yeah. And then you go to the men's side. Nothing in the one. Men's 200.
Knighton is younger than most college.
Yeah, that doesn't count. I'm not counting that. Men's 4. You had champion Allison run 43.7. And Randolph Ross make the team. Yep. Men's 8, Brandon Miller made the team. Men's 15, John Davis got second. Not going to be on the team because he didn't have the standard.
Yep.
Men's high hurdles, Trey Cunningham made the team. Men's 4 hurdles, Trevor Bassett, D2.
This is way above normal.
This is not. I didn't even realize until
I
now.
I just kept, like, every time I looked at it, I was like, wow, these college kids are, like, all showing up, like, big.
And that has to be because... Well, there's a lot of things at play. I hate it when things get distilled down to one thing. Remember, just the coldest, most lukewarm takes. Coldest, most lukewarm. That doesn't make any sense. The most lukewarm takes on the show possible. But part of that has to be the quick turnaround is helpful.
I mean, yeah, you would think so for sure. But even then, like, we just, you know.
Special group.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, some really insane performances in some and, you know, some events that weren't as strong maybe as we thought.
Well, and the 4 people making it, although if they're winning, that doesn't make a difference because they won. So it doesn't really. In the women's 1, 2, and 4, they literally won the race. So whether or not there was buys or not, that does not matter at all. Yeah, it's crazy. Good pull there. Good pull. I agree with what you said. How about Michael Norman?
Are fast. You say Michael Norman?
Yeah. How about him, huh?
Yeah, that's so it's official. He's 100% back. Mm-hmm. We thought he was, but I wanted to see, you know, wanted to see one more really good performance. And, I mean, Champion Allison running 43.7 too for second, made me go, like, as I was watching, I was like, okay, this is going to be probably sub 44, but like, I didn't think it was me 43.5 because Champion Allison was right there. But big performance there,
same,
Norman.
Same.
I mean, he's. Stephen Gardner's great, but I mean, I guess you run 43.6 and 43.5. Like, you got to be the favorite.
Do you, Jason? Is he the favorite? Really? You're putting him as favorite?
Yeah, I think he has to be right now.
What do we have from Gardner in terms of performances?
He hasn't. I don't feel like he's run much this year. I'm pulling up on Tila right now, but everything is loading slowly.
Let me try on my end. Just on this.
Oh, here we go. So he's run 44.2 this year.
That's good.
And then he's run 44.2, and then he's run 45.2. He's won every race. That's all you can really ask. He has not been tested, clearly. But
Paris Diamond League, and then he ran an LSU meet, and then he ran a 45 in the Bahamian Championships, which I'm sure he won comfortably.
Yeah, I mean, so he ran 43.48 in the 2019 in Doha. So that's
his PB. That's his PB
right there. Yeah, that's his best. And then 43.85 last year, another goal. So I mean, I don't know. I'd probably feel more comfortable calling it the coin flip than giving one of them the edge over the other. Just Gardner just hasn't been tested at all this year.
Okay, here's my question: if Norman's PB is 43.45, if he runs his 43, if he PBs, will he win gold?
I'm not willing to say that for sure. I still think there's a chance that Gardner can run that fast because that's. You know, obviously, if he, you know, goes way significantly faster than that, then odds are you're going to win gold, and odds are you're going to win gold anyway running that fast. But Gardner, all he does is win. He's been the best in the world for a few years now. So I don't think like 43-3 or 43-4 is off the table for Gardner.
I'm willing to say he will. I think he'll win if he can PB.
I mean, I think that's likely, but it, I don't think it's a guarantee.
You gotta give me a moment here. Just found out DeJounte Murray got traded to the Hawks. Whoa. For Danilo Gallinari and picks. So,
oh, I'm sorry. That is
not the best moment. Okay, keep moving. Tell me another thing about track that's cool. Go.
Another thing about track that's cool.
Quickly, okay. Quickly, just something. Distract me.
Evan Jaeger.
That was crazy.
I 100% wrong on this one. I thought he was washed. 8:17, not incredibly fast or anything, but it was enough to make the team. And I did not think that was going to really be on the table. So Bohr gets the win, then Jaeger. I did not see this coming. I'm really happy for him. That's awesome.
Keep talking. More track things. Go.
What else? We brought up the women's four. I was 100% convinced Felix was going to make this team. Like, completely convinced, especially because it just wasn't that fast. And I was like, oh, well, she'll run 50-0 or whatever it takes, you know, to win. But as we mentioned, Diggs won, Ellis, Irby. I mean, it took, what, 50.6 to make the team? And Felix just didn't have it on that day.
Yeah, that surprised me a bit. And she, you could tell after the second round when she was like, yeah, I'm just everything I got, basically. So I don't know what happened between the when she ran 50.7 in Europe and now.
Yeah.
Or in when she ran it, but clearly she didn't have that gear. And then she said afterwards, she's just, I'm happy to make the relay. And the mixed relay is probably better for me where I'm at right now, not the regular 4x4. So I appreciated the candor on that one and the honesty. She's like, yeah,
yeah. That's where I mean, I'm at. And she's playing with house money, obviously. And, you know, maybe she kept saying how, you know, this was it. And
this is my last 400. Listen, we started the year and this was all about, like, the victory lap, the last lap. It was about the journey, not the time on the clock. And then somehow it turned into her making another team and then potentially her making the individual 400.
Yeah.
Which would have been amazing. And even getting on the team is crazy. But it was weird. It was weird. Like, you look at the times, you look at what she ran, and the expectation changes and shifts. And then she was saying just, like, mentally it's been a, you know, challenge to get there, and she was pumped that this was like my last open 400. She's always loved the 200 more than 400. That's always been the case, which I think that's most people don't love the 400. So it's not that surprising, but yeah, she'll be in another Team USA uniform again for one last time.
Yeah. Which is, yeah, I still love that. And that's the only reason I am even going to acknowledge the mixed gender relay.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it just doesn't really matter.
Well, that's day one too. That final is on day one, so that's the old.
Get it out of the way.
Well, that's a story. There's no other finals that day. Well, that evening there's race walk finals in the morning, but that's it. And to have that, that's gonna set up to be her final goodbye. I don't know what leg she'll run. Hopefully, the U.S. doesn't blow it this time.
Right.
And get disqualified in the heats. That would be very bad. But I think that would be it. And then she'll exit the stage after day one. You know, there's so many worthy candidates in the regular 4x4 because you have all these women who aren't even 400 meter runners that you think they're going to put on it between McLaughlin, yep. Mo, potentially Muhammad. Britton Wilson's run 50.0 this year, not to mention the other, you know, the three women who made the team and Irby, Ellis, and Diggs. So they have a ton of resources. They could put her on and still win because they're going to win that race regardless. But it sounds like she knows that's the best spot for her. And I thought that was kind of neat that she said that.
Yeah, not surprising at all that Felix has like real clarity. And it's just like, yeah, you know what? I'm probably not a great choice for the top four one. But yeah, put me in the side relay. And yeah, I'm totally good with that. So let's get her one more medal. Why not?
All right. What else? What else we got? Keep going. More stuff about track.
What else haven't we talked about yet? Oh, men's high hurdles.
That was weird. That was a weird race.
It was. It was a close race. Holloway pulled, you know, decided not to run the final.
After telling me he would.
Oh, really? I didn't see that part. Yeah, that's...
After the first round, I said, "You gonna run all of them?" He said, "Yep."
And I mean, hey, you earn the bye. You're allowed to do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And I'm also allowed to go. That's super freaking lame.
I wanted to see it.
Him, Coleman, like, especially when it's a 100-meter race, like, you're not even gonna sweat. Like,
you're already there. You ran the semis.
Just do it. And it's easy for me to say, but as a fan, I feel like that's okay for me to say.
Or
it's
if you're not gonna do it, just tell me. Just at least tell me.
Yes, exactly. Tell Kevin. But overall, yeah, it's just, as I say, to me, it's lame to not.
Here's
do it, so.
Interesting side effect though. Daniel Roberts, who won the race,
yeah,
said it helped him that Grant scratched.
Huh?
Because he was supposed to be in the lane next to Grant. Daniel was in 7, Grant was in 6, and he said having Grant next to you is tough because he's so fast. It can take you out of your race, out of your rhythm. So I said, "Were you a little like, how'd you feel about Grant not being in there?" He said, "I was good."
I mean, that's I'm glad for Daniel Roberts because that's like
that's a big time performance.
Yeah, that's I mean, you know, because a couple years ago it was like, "Hey, these two were squaring off in college, and they were pretty close." And Roberts had run sub-13, so like he was right there. But then it seemed like he hadn't really. This is his best race in a couple years. It feels like, right?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
I mean, even ignoring the stakes, like just the time wise, I was like, oh man, all right, good to see it again.
Yeah.
So,
I was expecting more. We also found out after the race, Devin Allen's father passed away during the meet. So
yeah, that's so brutal.
Yeah, very sad to hear, and condolences to him and his family. And yeah, no one knew that, you know, throughout the weekend until afterwards. This event though is just getting a lot of attention because of the Holloway Allen, you know, 12-8 potential, and then you throw Trey Cunningham, and I guess you throw Roberts in there too. So
right.
This I know I picked it and it didn't live up to the billing, but for Worlds it still has the potential. I don't know how much better it gets for Worlds. Like, you got to look at which events have this international contingent that enhances the event, and
yeah,
I don't know if Hansel Parchman
outside of Jamaica, yeah, how much. Yeah.
Martin Odegaard, I don't know. And especially if they factor in, it's probably because people ran slower.
If they're like, in a 13-0.
Yeah. So we shall see, though.
Devin Allen barely made the team. I'm glad he did, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just in general, I'm glad he did. But also after what he went through, he just barely edged out by hundredths to get the third spot.
Yeah, that was... It was a strange race. It was not what you expected to see. Starting with, I thought Grant was going to be there. I said, "What's going on here?" Before we move on, what's it like to completely quit a sport? Just like a sport that you've like watched and loved forever. Like, what's it like to not have that in your life anymore? Have you ever done that?
I don't think I have done that. Okay. There's definitely times when I've paid less attention. You know, there's been some dark Bulls years,
okay.
as you know. Yeah, and you find yourself just kind of, and that's all of a sudden when you're actually interested in all that weird ancillary, you know, you got some good young talent on the team. You drafted, what's his name that I already forgot that I texted you about. So it's all focused on that. Keldon Johnson taking over.
He might be traded by the time this pod's over.
Yeah, this is rough. Well, they're going to get Ayton or something maybe. I don't know.
I'd rather.
I'm surprised they traded him. That is a bummer. I'm bummed out about that. I wonder how he'll like playing with Trae Young.
And to go to that team of all teams, now I have to cheer against him.
Yeah, that's brutal.
All right, keep going. What's another track thing that happened?
Another track thing. We're on the hurdles. Bri Benjamin looked pretty good.
That was it didn't, because the field was good. Bassett was that's good. Ross
yeah,
was
the field
good.
Was way better than I expected. So I thought he was running 47 mid.
Yeah, that was weird, right?
And especially because I'm so bad at knowing when the finish line is actually coming.
I think he's I think he could do something really good at Worlds because he had COVID, he had tendonitis, missed, he just didn't look, he looked out of rhythm too, even though part of it was those guys being so close and it made me think he was running slower. But I think he said afterwards that his race was not very clean. So I think we're going to get, obviously we're going to get under 47.
And yeah, 47.0, like that's a great sign. That's that exceeded my expectations for him in this race.
Yeah. And I know we're in a world of 45 now. But
yeah, that's the thing. It's like we can't forget that 47.0 is still really, really good.
Yeah. Well, that was the number. Wait, what do you go? 47 what?
47.06.
04. So that's the, that was the 14th fastest time in history. That's pretty good when you consider
not bad.
Warholm's and
12 of them are Warholm ahead of them. Yeah.
Well, it's Warholm, Benjamin, Warholm, Dos Santos, Kevin Young, Benjamin, Warholm, Warholm, Samba, Benjamin, Edwin Moses, Benjamin, Brian Bronson, and then that one. That's it.
That's really good. Yeah. Especially, like, we just had no real idea of what he was going to do in this race. So, good signs for Benjamin.
Yeah, Warholm's only run faster than that four times. And Rye's only run faster than that four times. So, yeah, that's good. That's a good result, especially considering what he was dealing with going in. So, and now he's a world leader. Cool, cool, cool. Good. More track stuff. What else?
Let's see. We'll stick to we'll polish off the hurdles here. women's high hurdles. Kenny Harrison looked and
a squeaker.
I mean, 12:34, 12:35. You know, two fastest times in the world this year. Harrison looked like vintage Harrison there, like where she was getting faster over every hurdle. It seemed like.
Well, I can read the splits too if you want.
And then Johnson was great too. I mean, like this is you added in Camacho Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a really, really good event.
Yeah.
I feel like it kind of was flying under the radar a little bit this year, but
yeah,
that's getting me excited.
Good call. How about the men's eight?
Men's eight was kind of fun, right? I mean, not fast still, but like
had a dive.
Did have a dive.
That's good.
So yeah, I'm sure, you know, what's her name in Brooklyn? Jessica in Brooklyn or whoever would call. When angry about dives.
Oh, Danielle in Brooklyn.
Yeah. Danielle in Brooklyn, that's what it was. I'm sure he's, you know, big Clayton Murphy fan, going to be upset about this. But, yeah, Hopple looked good, you know, kind of took it over. Hopple, Coach Miller, just like we all thought in the men's eight. Weird event, but it was a fun race to watch. It seemed like a, you know, like a totally normal 800, right? Like, it wasn't bad. It was a close, like, kind of jostly race where it was like, kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
Murphy tried to do the, you know, late thing, and he normally just finds just enough, and he was just barely short. But, yeah, that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Hopple might be rounding the form a little bit.
I think Hopple's got a chance at gold, and you say, hey, you say that about everybody, Kevin. But, yeah, this is for real. He's just, he's very
I think he has a chance in the sense that he has, like, a 5% chance.
Okay, but everybody has who has a better chance of winning than Bryce Hopple?
I don't know, someone who's broken 144 this year?
That's not a very long list.
No, but at least some people have.
You look at his record.
144.6, and it, you know, that's fine.
He hasn't had a bad race, though. Like, he's had okay races, but he hasn't had a bad race, and I think that's could be a winning formula this year. That was pretty convincing, right? The way I said that, the way I set all that up. I think that was pretty good.
I guess, yeah. I mean, it wasn't a top 20 time this year.
I don't care about the time.
I care if you're not one of the 20 fastest people in your event. I do care. I'm just going to throw that out.
You know who's never the 20 fastest in this event? Mo Farah. This is what you should be looking
for. For the year? Yeah, he usually is.
Well, now he's retired, Jason, so I hope you're happy.
And it's the 800. Like, I feel like that matters a little bit.
He won Mount SAC. He got third in Birmingham Diamond League, won that New York meet. I don't know. I think in indoors, he won Milrose. He lost to your guy, Mariano Garcia of Spain.
I didn't think Mario Garcia beat anybody this year, so that's not a great look.
No, but I'm saying indoors he was good.
Yeah.
And then he went great indoors. and then he got third and he got bronze at World Indoors too. Like his floor, like he's gonna make the final. I'd be stunned if Bryce
Hopple seems like a safe bet to make the final. I agree with that.
And then from there, I think he can make it happen. Home crowd, new Hayward Field magic.
I don't know. Max Bergen just ran 143.5.
He did. Maxie Bergen did run 143.
Oh, is it Bergen?
Sorry. Bergen, yeah, yeah. He's solid. He's young.
Yeah, he's the male Hodgkinson.
But is, come on, let's not get crazy.
Hey, 143.5, that's legit at 20, you know?
Yeah, I'm just, I think this thing is still open. I think
it's wide open for sure. I just think, I don't think he's like one of the five favorites for gold.
Oh, he absolutely is. Bryce Hopple absolutely is. He's just not in, I talked to him about this. He's just, they haven't been in a, there hasn't been a ton of fast races this year, as is evidenced by what we talk about literally every week on the show. What's his PB? He's run 143.2. So he has 143 potential.
And if that, if he does that, then I'm, you know, I'm all in. But man, that's, what was
he
that?
He hasn't.
2019?
That was 2020, actually.
Okay.
He just hasn't been in a crazy fast race. So I think he's ready when the time comes. You're going to see Bryce Hopple emerge.
He might.
But yeah,
he might.
Miller, and I mean, Koech, a big surprise there, too. All right. What else? What have we not
talked about? We haven't talked the 15s, I don't think, or the 5s.
15. No,
we left the distances to the last.
15, 5. You mentioned Steeple on the men's side briefly. Women, it was Coburn, then Frerichs, and Waitman. Waitman getting the third spot. Frerichs got stepped on and her spike ripped open, which is nuts. She still won. And we haven't talked about the women's 100 yet either.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I guess we touched on it just very briefly, but not.
Yeah, with the college thing. But yeah, 15s, Sinclair Johnson got the win on the women's side, men's side.
Looks really good.
Cooper Tier. Men are taking a weird team because people didn't have the standard. Just
and Hawker
didn't make it out
some
round.
Sort of injury that we don't know about yet.
Well, no, he said he didn't run for 2 weeks. Like he had to cross train for 2 weeks because he was injured before.
Right, so, but we don't know what the injury was or anything.
I
missed it.
I didn't see it yet, but he said he's going to try to run more this year. So I don't think it was.
Which that's a bummer because Tier Hawker would have been really fun.
Well, if you're a U.S. fan, you want to see U.S. medals. I think you would have wanted Hawker on that team. I think him at his best.
Yeah, because and obviously medaling in the men's 15 just in the world is a brutal challenge. But at least Hawker had a puncher's chance. So we knew that event outside of those two was pretty wide open, and obviously the no standard thing kind of threw everything off there.
Yeah, so you get Gregoric in there, you get Josh Thompson in there, John Davis of Illinois got second, which is wild. And then Eric Holt was up there too, but he didn't have.
Run fast if you don't have the standard, guys. I know it's weird and it's hard to just do it, but I don't get it. I'll never understand it.
You don't think they should have run, what did they end up running here? Hold on.
346.
You don't think they should run 346?
I feel like you go down trying to do it. I mean, kudos Jonathan Davis. He was like, hey, I finished second at USA's. I'm like, really? How'd you do at Worlds? Well,
okay. For Davis, I get it because there's no. Like, he was such a long shot of doing it. But
it came out of nowhere, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, but some of the other guys are just like, you might as well
Just go for it. Yeah, I mean, like, talk to your other guys, get a text chain going, be like, hey, guys.
Well, you know who didn't?
We're going for it.
You know who didn't have the standard going to the final and ended up getting it was Evan Jaeger. So
that's true. Worked. Credit to Jaeger.
Yeah.
Wily veteran.
Women's side of things, as I mentioned, Johnson, 403, McGee, 404, and then St. Pierre, 405. I think Sinclair Johnson's got an outside shot at a medal. You probably disagree because you don't think the U.S. is going to get any medals, apparently. But
well,
she's got a shot.
There is that shot because I mean it's the Jenny Simpson factor of just like, hey, sometimes weird stuff opens up for bronze.
Well, it's right? Also like, we haven't seen Safwan Hassan, Laura Muir.
No, yeah, for sure. Kibion is not losing to anyone. There's
I didn't say
no
that.
Chance.
I didn't say gold.
Muir hasn't looked as unbeatable as normal. Like there's still I think there's a tier of four women probably ahead of that, but like all it takes is a little bit falling apart and Kipyegon is the only just irrefutable, just impossible to beat person.
Yeah. GDS.
So I agree.
GDS
I think
is
she
a
has
scratch. GDS is hurt. So then you have another person in there who's been in the mix a lot. The Ethiopian contingent is stronger this year, but Kipyegon is as good as ever, but everybody else is not as good as they've been or not there. Right. Like Safwan Hassan not being there. That's huge. That's just a whole medal that opens up for you with her not being there. But I would want to see the star list first, but the Ethiopian crew has been really good. this year, so, starting indoors.
Yeah, the guys in there. Yeah, so it'll be tough, but the race has to kind of fall apart a little bit for her to have a chance, I think.
Well, she also got fourth at Prix, so it's not just this race.
No, she looked great. Like, and this is not, I'm not trying to undersell her. I think you're right. I think some of those things, if Muir's not right, and then you have GDS, like you said, you're all of a sudden it was like six or seven women.
Yeah, yeah.
And then if it gets down to four women that are just better than you, it's like, well, nothing too crazy has to happen to sneak in there.
Exactly. Okay. So we did the 1500s, 5000s. So on the men's side, fast race, you had guys rabbiting, which was a weird thing. Jaeger came back. And then Hilary Bohr came back. So two steeplers came back. Hilary Bohr rabbited his brother, Emmanuel, and then Evan Jaeger out there for Bowerman. It ends up being Fisher, who we thought.
Good.
Breaking away with...
He just needed to do that. Like, when you're the class of the field, you got to kind of do it.
Yeah. He broke away with Nur and Bohr, and looked like it was going to be those three for a while. And then Woody Kincaid just started a kick from freaking Springfield and then ran 54 in the last... 400. Boy, I just feel horrible for him because he just missed the 10K team and then he fell apart right as Kincaid was just going into fifth gear. So you end up with Kincaid finishing behind Fisher and then Abdihamid Nur from NAU getting the third spot.
Yeah, no, that was good. That was a good race, a fun race, and a good team. I mean, like, you know, Fisher's got a shot to medal. I mean, again, there's a lot of real high-end talent there, but I don't know. When you run 1240, you get a shot.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and Kincaid's kick, I think, if it goes slow,
absolutely. You got a shot there. Yeah, it's not, you know, they're not going to run 1240 at Worlds, probably.
Women's five, Cranny, Schweizer, Enfeld.
Yeah.
Enfeld gets fourth in the 10K, comes back. Cranny had to scratch the 10K because she wasn't feeling good, and then comes back and wins. And then Schweizer, she tried to make it in the 1500 team, too. Schweizer didn't win anything, but she
barely missed it.
Yeah. She almost had the option of three different events. That was pretty cool, right?
Yeah, she tried the Hassanathon. She mentioned that she wasn't going to do all three at Worlds regardless, but credit to her for running all three. I mean, I know obviously 10, you know, happened a month ago. But even then, the fact that she just decided, screw it, I'm going to go in there, and she was in third with like 30 meters to go.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy. And I think you picked Kalati to make the team because you always do, and she finishes fourth.
Oh, so mad.
So close.
I was so frustrated. I was like, this is going to be it. But I don't know. Enfeld's great. And
yeah,
that's a cool comeback story for her.
No, totally agree.
All right, what's left?
I think that was it, right? From the running.
100, anyway. 100, women's 100, Jefferson.
Oh, yeah, we said we missed. Jesus. Sorry to women's 100 fans. It was wind, but 1069,
yeah.
1072, 1074, like, should not have been this long. So yeah, sincere apologies.
Yeah, we're just bouncing around here. It's all right. It's all good. Yeah, Melissa Jefferson, Coastal Carolina, gets it done. Leah Hobbs second, 1072, and then Tonisha Cherry, 1074. Thoughts?
Yeah, and Richardson goes out in the first round. So... Just when we had a hold on her and it was like, hey, she's probably the fourth or fifth best in the world right now, she doesn't get out of the first round. So, total enigma. I can't predict anything with that.
Yeah. Well, and then comes back.
But a really talented young team.
Yeah.
Like I said, again, wind and stuff, and obviously the women's 100 with the three Jamaicans is a real brutal hill to climb. But who knows?
Yeah. No, it's tough to figure out how to get medals there when Jamaica gets four and three of them are as good as they are. And people might be shaky on Fraser Price in the two, but nah, there's no doubt about what she's going to do in the 100. And then even you said something about Thompson or So I think U.S. will be better than they were last year in this event, but... it's going to be tough to get past Jackson, Thompson, Hurrah, and Fraser Price. All right. Let's see. Is that it? I think that's it.
I think that was it.
Do you want to talk about anything else?
I think that was all the, all the running events. Anyway. So that was, I mean, it was great. As it always is, like I said, the biggest downside for me was some of the guys who had the buys who decided not to run. Just because, like I said, I know they're allowed to do it. I'm, you know, whatever, but. kind of lame.
Kind of lame, according to Jason.
That's my final thoughts on it.
You got to say, and that's the bottom line.
That's the way it was.
And that, you need a what do you call it? Like a catchphrase.
Yeah, a little sign off kind of thing.
Yeah. All right. Do you want me to do emails?
I think so.
I keep getting signed out of my emails, so I'm going to have to do my best here to.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Somebody's my phone here. I'm scrolling back. Here's Luke. I recently finished writing and defending my dissertation, so I'm not exactly caught up on episodes. However, I wanted to drop in with this picture of my two worlds colliding, which is of Kipchoge on a bike. Ineos sponsors a pro cycling team, and I guess they're combining forces with another of their sponsored athletes and starting a cycling training camp at Kaptagat. Time to count down the days before we have more Kenyan Tour de France riders than track world champs in a given year. Anyway, attaches my dissertation. If you're interested, honestly, I think it's pretty accessible to this audience, which has a cursory knowledge of biomechanics. Most of the pages are appendices, so don't get too scared by the page count. Luke, almost formerly from Delaware.
You got a guess on the page count?
I don't, and I haven't opened it yet. Wait.
I'm looking at it now.
Dissertation, 185?
Under.
Oh, okay. I'll read it then.
No, 100. I'm sorry. You're under.
Oh, okay. I won't read it then. No, just kidding. No. 260.
Okay, you're in between, so that's good.
Oh, 220?
Just above. 239.
Okay, but how many are appendices?
That's a great question. I'm scrolling.
What if it's malware and Luke just played the long game and now he has all your credit card info?
There's a lot of graphs, too. Right now I'm on page 200, like in the 200s, and it's pages with just several graphs of knee angle, hip angle, knee movement.
Oh, that's good.
Movement, stuff like that.
Yeah, so. That's cool. Well, if people want to read it, let us know. I forward it to you.
Yeah, absolutely. If Luke's, cool, sharing it around, I'm sure he obviously worked hard on this, and this is more impressive than anything I've ever done. I feel confident saying. So, well done, Luke. Appendix starts on page 234.
Okay, so that's still pretty long.
Oh, wait, but the page number on the bottom says 218? I'm confused.
All right, you've confused Jason.
Yep, but that's an easy thing to do.
Fix your page. Heretofore, Jason is confused. All right, I'm bouncing around here. Hey, guys, I'm sure you'll talk about it, but what'd you think of Noah's little celebration at the end of the 200? Some people seem to love it, want the rivalry. Some people seem to hate it. Giving everything that happened this weekend, including in Jamaica, how would you rank the sprint events going into Worlds? Do the U.S. men sweep the 100 and 200? I think this is our best chance at a sweep across all events. Does Abby Steiner win gold? And that is Brian, the emailer for me from Raleigh in Pennsylvania, but now from Boulder. How would I rank them? Is, I guess, in terms of interest, and you're just doing 1, 2, and 4? That's really hard. I mean, the good thing about it is all of them have interesting storylines in them. And there's a lot of different characters involved, too.
Yeah, I think men's 2 is the top of my list right now with that rivalry.
Okay. Men's 100, though, it's open-ish.
Is very open. The women's
Johan Blake could win.
Women's 100 with...
Yeah.
You know, what could happen with that? And obviously you mentioned Steiner, Jackson, Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
Women's 4 is the bottom. And that's nothing against Shawnee Milwebo. It's just the only one with that I, you know, I don't think has an obvious, like, huge storyline.
Yeah.
Because the men's 4, like we mentioned, Gardner and Norman squaring off is huge. It's really, really good. I still think men's 2, if you gave me, like, hey, you can watch one,
mm-hmm.
that's the one I'm picking.
Marshall, a couple thoughts on the U.S. Championships. A, who is on your men's 4x1 team, women's 4x4? Two, it's frustrating to miss 3 minutes of the steeple and 5Ks watching commercials for Wendy's Frosties and DQ Blizzard meals, even on the tape delayed. Three, whenever something big in track and field happens, I always check the top headlines on ESPN.com. Somewhat surprisingly, Sid's world record made the list, although it was a bit depressing to see it below the news that Jimmy Garoppolo is back on track and, quote, will throw soon. Four, bold prediction update. Way back in January, I made 4 bold predictions. One, men's steeplechase becoming a decent event to watch, and 4 men going sub-4. At a minimum, the Evan Jaeger comeback. Oh, sorry, sub-8. Makes this compelling, a heck of an event to watch. 2, Mboma breaking the Terminator World Record. Not going to happen. 3, Brandon Miller meddling in the 800 at the World Championships. He's still in the field, so a possibility. 4, I said that Shakir Richardson would not make the U.S. 100 final World Championships. However, it was for being banned for starting a fist fight maybe next year. 5, I hosted a watch party on Sunday, and one of my buddies casually mentioned he owned a head-to-head victory over John Davis, second place in the 1500. In the mile, way back in 2016, my buddy edged out Jonathan in the Strange Donut Mile, one donut every quarter mile, and these were big Strange Donuts results here. That is Marshall from St. Louis, formerly of Iowa. Okay, so the one question he has here is the who's on your men's 4x1 and women's 4x4. I'll start with women's 4x4. I would go if $1 million was on the line and I needed to win against a team of monsters. I don't know.
Yes.
Sydney McLaughlin.
Yep.
A thing Mo.
Yep. Two easiest picks right there.
I would probably go Britton Wilson. She ran 50-0. And then, I mean, Steiner split, 48-9 or whatever? And it's NCAAs. Yeah. I would either go her or I would just go solid Talitha Diggs. She's run under 50 this year.
Yeah, I was going to go Mo McLaughlin. Obviously, if I knew a little more about Muhammad, I would feel really comfortable with that too. But Steiner, I think, belongs on that team.
Yeah.
Like I said, if I'm just picking just pure talent, like who yeah. can run the fastest. Yeah, Diggs won USAs, and she's gotten sub 50. That's good enough for me.
Noah from New York.
And your 4x1 team? What are you thinking? Curly, oh. Bromell.
Curly, Bromell. Lyles.
Coleman?
Maybe Bracey. Bracey out the blocks.
Yeah, Coleman or Bracey to start it off is a good...
Yeah, and then on the backstretch, maybe Curly. Curly to have Lyles run the bend and then to Bromell.
Bromell is the closer. Yeah, I think that's the move.
Yeah. I mean, Knighton with a flying star would probably be pretty good, but I just don't... I think they're going to want... experience, even though everybody's inexperienced at succeeding at this. Okay. Friday and Saturday, I raced through the Canyon Trail stream after waking up. I'll keep it to the medal contenders, and major impressions. Let's start. Men's 800's back. What if I told you the biggest development in the men's 800 might not have even involved a Kenyan who ran the 800? Well, it might be true, as my favorite Emmanuel Career blasted 44.8 40-meter clocking. Maybe he'll be okay after those 146s. He's entering the 400. I expect his cheeky false start act again. Now, in the proper 800, my fellow Noah Cabet, side note, you were right. I stand for all athletic Noahs. Shout out to the OG, Noah Nguyen. Went out hard in a 24 mid, 50 low. He held on to a 145 flat. Sadly for Noah, this is Kenya, not America, and that fade got him a distant eighth instead of third, like Brandon Miller. Wycliffe Kinyamal looked great, running a big boy time at 143.5, even with the stumble to avoid clipping Emmanuel Wanyoni, who, despite really poor tactics, did a nice slowdown and two-lane shift on the home stretch to escape a box and ran 144. Third place, Elias Ngeni had a big closer in 144, but will be out of Worlds with not enough tests, and all out of the U.S. 1500s. They skipped over a bunch of guys, including Festus Lagat. Remember that theme. Sadly, the Kenyan Commonwealth team is also loaded as a result, which I might watch, I guess, with UK sending stars as well. Women's 800 side, Mary Mora said she met Faith Kipyegon on Helen O'Bear for the first time and both gave her encouraging words ahead of a race. Well, she beat Kipyegon convincingly with a wider rider, 157.4 to 158, and then smashed the Kenyan record in the 400 with a 50.8. Women's 800, watch out, this might be a four-woman race. Okay. Mary Mora. Remember that name?
Yeah, 157.4. That's
1500, which had Tim even with a bye versus Kipsang. I'd recommend a watch, as it was a cracker, as the Brits would say. Tim and Kipsang traded leads 55, 59, 59, but nobody showing their hand as they ran side by side. Reynold Cheruiyot made a huge move in the backstretch to challenge those two, and from then on it was a race. Kipsang and Tim trade the lead with Kipsang just coming clear, and Kumari Taki pipping Reynold Cheruiyot in a four-man blanket finish. My takeaways were Tim looked healthy, Kipsang continued to thrive, and Taki being a medal threat behind them. Men's 5,000, Kameli and Krop controlled it. Women's 15 and 5 were missing champions. Men's 7,000 is just going to anger me. I'll read this part. Half marathon master Kipawat Candy channeled his inner Woody Kincaid and went from 5th and 20 meters back with 250 go to winning with an absurd surge. but he doesn't have the standard. Oh, yeah, he ran 2650 on a road course 7 weeks ago. That doesn't count. There's no altitude adjustment because, of course, his world rankings should rise to the top 20. It's 36 behind the likes of Patrick Deaver and Kieran Tintivate in the next update. Let's hope Athletics Canada changes course and lets him in because he could make that load at 10K even better instead of being wasted in the Commonwealth Games. Next to last, men's steeple, some fun moments. Consensus Kibruto was back and was going full Ezekiel Kemboi, actively instructing a confused Abraham Kimbawat to not kick the last 100 to let youngster and the next great one, Amos Serum, win. Serum then danced and allowed Kemboi to celebrate the win. Serum is reigning world junior champ and looks legit but won't compete due to lack of tests. Sad. Can we get some tests over there?
Right.
Kipruto looks like his old self, down to the antics. Lastly, Omanyala won the 100 in 10.03. Afterward, he acknowledged he'll need to level up, but it seems incredible that he beat Curly straight up early this season. Anyhow, that's my dispatch. Sorry it was so long. Part two. Oh, he says we can save this one, so we'll do that. All right. Cool. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, I like the update of the, I mean, Kenyan trials, obviously always good. Yeah, and some, I mean, no matter what, the winning times out of the trials from Kenya are going to be really fast, and it's going to have a lot of medalists in there. And even with Kipyegon on like running the 8 instead of the 15. So yeah, I'm excited.
Dave from LA. Felix, last minute hot take prediction. Felix digs deep and wins a 400. And then he responded, well, I shot my shot.
I agreed with you, David. I was all in. I was like, oh, I think Felix is going to win this.
But here's Brian again with another prediction, although this time it's triumphant. Hey guys, there were doubters. I tried to tell them once, twice, three times, four times that Cooper Tier was the best mile in the country. I almost quintupled down after Hawker didn't make the final, but didn't want to jinx it. Tier left it late. I was nervous with 200 to go and 100 to go, but Cooper was able to get around everybody in the last 100. 331 is coming next. That is Brian.
Good for Brian. He deserves this. This is a good victory lap. He literally has been saying it over and over and over throughout the year. So
you did it.
Well done, Brian.
You did it. Okay. Let's go to Dan from Chicago.
Yeah.
Long time, 32nd time. Listen to the talk about what seemingly unbeatable 400-meter hurdlers like Warholm and McLaughlin could do in the open 400 or in the 800 made me wonder, is this fascination with 400 hurdlers branching out a new thing? I'm not that old, but I'm older than the two of you and remember vividly the heyday of Edwin Moses, who was quite literally unbeatable for a decade. And for all his invincibility, I don't remember any talk about what Edwin Moses could do in another event. I don't have access to check the TILA. What other events he's run, but according to Wikipedia, he had run the high hurdles and the open 400, but not since the late 70s. So apparently he ran nothing but the 400-meter hurdles after 78, and it doesn't appear anybody had an issue with it. So is the cross event fascination, which is not unique to House of Run, a product of our internet created thirst for content, or is there something unique about Sid and Carson that makes them more interesting than others? Thanks for what you do. That is Dan. Well, hold on. Didn't we talk about Moses having an 800 PB in the system?
No, because I'm on Tila right now. He has never run the 800. I think you brought him up once and I looked up and he did not run. He only ran the 400 in 77.
Some
once.
Oh, 1977. I thought you meant 77 seconds.
No. He ran 45.6. He literally ran one professional 400 meter in his entire career. And he ran the 110 meter hurdles.
Yeah.
Twice.
I think it is entirely the current thirst for content. That's what I'll say.
Yeah, no, and it's probably unfair, to be honest, it's like there's nothing wrong with just being the best at your event for a really long time. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, yeah, I am like intrigued by this, and I think it is probably a little bit of product of the times. Like, yeah, and if Sydney just decided, hey, guess what? I'm going to completely just rewrite the all-time list with my name just all over it, like someone who, you know, a Miss Pac-Man at a Pizza Hut type situation where it's just like, I'm going to take over the whole leaderboard. I mean, great. But it's like, she's so good that, yeah, we just can't help ourselves with thinking of what else to do. Granted, we did this with guys like Rudisha and that too.
Yeah.
I think it's just a fascination with really fast people.
Yeah, there's... If we were doing a podcast in the Edmund Moses era, first of all, we would have made a ton of money. Second of all, we would have talked about this. Let's go to Brian. Look out. Because the Boys and Girls Club in Wilmington, North Carolina is planning a track facility that will put the Bowerman Towerman to shame. This will be more than a track. It will be a, quote, optimism oasis featuring the track of optimism and the field of dreams. Their plan has about 1,000 different features, all with ridiculously uplifting names. My favorite is probably the quantum physics tunnel of time and space and energy that winds through a forest of bamboo. A very interesting use of the infield, but I dig it. Can't wait for Wilmington to host world champs here in 2025. I've got a spare bedroom if anyone wants to firm down. Happy running. That's Brian Wilson, not the Beach Boy. And he sent along an image of it, and it is incredible with all these different names.
My God, yeah.
What is this actually going to happen? I don't know. What's the website is 100ultraforkids.com. So the number 100
ultra. There's the No Fear Hemisphere, which is a skateboarding bowl. The Poetry Labyrinth, the Mind Maze Exploratorium. I'm blown away by this. Like, there's so much here. I can't even get through it all. But I love it.
It's like an indie film in a track.
Yeah, it really is. But yeah, looks,
the website's wild too.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool. I'm the promenade of positivity.
So it says it's a legit 400 meter eight lane certified track for training and competition. Oh, for an actual high school too. Yeah, at New Hanover High School.
The tower of optimism around the final turn is pretty good. So
you gotta have some optimism around the final turn. If you're not optimistic, what are you doing out there? Right. Okay, here we go. We got a voicemail from Chief, and then we got this one from Laura. Oh, and then we got the scooter. Ah, we got the pop-up video we didn't do. We're going to hold those one more week. We're going to hold, because Laura's was really good about the pacing queen that we talked about. And then the pop-up video with the Diamond League. We can do that as like the Diamond League. We're going to play the Diamond League song again next week anyway. But why don't you play Chief's voicemail just because I want to. I saw him. I was walking down the little street, popped out of nowhere in Eugene. It's perfect.
This one looks like a long one, and it looks like he might have gotten cut off.
Yeah, he's got two. So
it's a two-parter here.
2x speed or something. Running out. Go.
What up, boys? Chief from Illinois, now in Indianapolis. Drink your milk, Braylon. Boys, there were some amazing performances at the U.S. Championships here in 2022. Obviously, you can't overlook world records. I believe also the 400 meter men's hurdles delivered, not from a standpoint of seeing Rye set a PB or anything, but Rye performed very well. And then all of a sudden, the U.S. has a real shot at having a second medalist, with how these young guys are coming on. Trevor Bassett taking almost the second off of his PB. And if I'm remembering correctly, he PB'd back-to-back days. So that's interesting. I did find it curious that there were only two rounds of the 1500 for men and women. Also, as much as it pains me to say, the men's 1500 was not a good race. So out of all the great performances there were, the men's 1500 just wasn't one of them. Shout out to John Davis of the University of Illinois native, getting second place in that race. Doesn't have the standard. Don't think he's going to get in on whatever BS world rankings means. So, but if I was him, I'd call up Eric Swinsky and be like, hey, I've got $1,000. You just tell me when and where, pace me through, and I'm going to get the standard this week. So, lastly, the biggest loser at the trials is a toss-up between Shikari and Tracktown USA. Both were abysmal. Obviously, not getting out of the first round is not a good look for Shikari. Then skipping the media, skipping the mixed zone, and then coming back to the mixed zone at the end and saying that the media is hard on track athletes. I don't know if she watches any other sports, but Sully, y'all give them softballs. You don't even ask hard questions. of track athletes, which is fine, but like inherently track athletes get, hey, how'd you feel? Or what'd you think of the race? Or how's training been going? Those are easy questions. That's not the type of questions that the NBA got. Sorry, boys, got cut off there. Last thing though, again, Eugene's gotta be close to the Biggest Loser. That crowd, I've seen bigger crowds at Tuesday night dual high school meets. The city should be embarrassed. Also, it wasn't a big deal at the championships, but at the world championships, if they really are planning on having 30,000 people, they're in for a rude awakening when they only have two bathrooms per gender in the entire place. With that, peace, boys.
I didn't know that about the bathrooms.
Yeah, that's a good point. For sure. Yeah, that's, I mean, obviously we know it's not going to be close to 30,000. Probably won't be close to 20,000. But even then, you get 15,000 people.
Yeah.
That would be a lot of people for two bathrooms. So that's a great point. But we touched on a lot of the other stuff he mentioned.
Yeah. Yeah, and we got to get to those other emails too next week when we record, because it's been a couple weeks since
yeah, shouldn't done. Be as crazy of a show, you know, with USA's yeah. done.
We'll have more to catch up.
Worlds.
Yeah, so we'll need more emails. So just because we didn't get to all of them today, you got more thoughts on the meet, houseofrun@gmail.com. Email in, let us know. Jason, thank you, sir. This was fun.
Yeah, no, thank you. This was great. I appreciated your Eugene update about everything that's going on, but I'm excited to get my own taste in a few weeks.
Excited. All right. Until next week.
Allison Felix. Good night. I know she's running relay, but that, you know, it's her last real one, so yeah.